Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Ed Alexander, Ed producing and engineering our show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show for this final Monday of June. It is June 29th, 2015. We're coming to you live from Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, with live streaming at buckmastershow.com and on the station's fine website, that's kvoi.com. We have all of our podcasts and the complete show archive. That's available for you 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. We begin, as we do each Monday afternoon, with our Monday political face-off. At about 12:30, we'll be joined by UA climate scientist Zach Guido talking about the summer thunderstorm season, which is getting cranked up. Pretty good start over the weekend. And then we will talk with the head of JTED, the Joint Technology Education District, and JTED's fight for survival after being basically zeroed out of state funding. The live line number for the Buckmaster Show is 790-2040, and our Facebook page is Bill Buckmaster. It is time for our Monday political face-off featuring commentators John Munger, Tucson attorney and former chair of the Arizona Board of Regents, and I should say former president of the Arizona Board of Regents.
That's correct.
Yes, there is no real chair. There is a president, and John headed up the board. John also ran for governor as a Republican candidate in 2010, and also with us today, Jeff Rogers, who was the longtime head of the Pima County Democratic Party, and Jeff and John, both very prominent attorneys here in the Tucson area. The Monday Political Face-Off is sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe's specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. John and Jeff, how are you gentlemen today?
Good. Loving the monsoons.
Very good rain over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely great. It was a wonderful weekend. Got a lot of rain, and it really cooled things down a little bit.
Well, we've been waiting for this Supreme Court decision on Arizona redistricting. The Supreme Court announcing today its decision in the Arizona State Legislature versus Arizona Independent Redistricting Commission, known as IRC. It was a 5-4 decision, the court deeming Proposition 106, a voter-enacted reform that gave the nonpartisan IRC the power to draw congressional and legislative boundaries in Arizona, the High Court saying it is not a violation of the U.S. Constitution Elections Clause. Jeff, this was somewhat unexpected, this decision.
Well, I figured it would be 5-4, but when I listened to the oral argument some months back, it kind of sounded like Kennedy was going to join with the other conservatives, and we would probably lose this. But it's a very, very interesting and fascinating decision by Ruth Bader Ginsburg that Kennedy joined in, and she traces the history of the Elections Clause part of the Constitution, and she goes back and even talks about the Federalist Papers and talks about John Locke and his theories of government. I mean, it's highly recommended reading because it's accessible to an ordinary person. You don't really need to be a lawyer to really get a lot out of this decision that talks a lot about the history of America and its constitution and various state constitutions. We now are at a point where 20 states have some form of referendum and initiative, and Justice Ginsburg talks about how that. While those things didn't exist when we became a country and when we drafted our Constitution, that they were part of a reformist movement that was at the turn of the 20th century in the early 1900s or late 1900s and early to 20th century. They started to crop up mostly in Western progressive states like Arizona. I know we don't think of Arizona as being a progressive state much these days, but at the turn of the century when we became a state in 1912, we had one of the most revolutionary constitutions of of any state, and it allowed recalls of judges, which is not allowed in very many states. As a matter of fact, we had to remove that to get our statehood, and then we put it back in the Constitution, and it allowed referendum and recall. And Justice Ginsburg goes on to say that, you know, what you have here is you have the legislature basically trying to take the power away from the citizens and people and voters of Arizona. And she says in one wonderful quote here, the dominant purpose of the elections clause, the historical record bears out, was to empower Congress to override state election rules, not to restrict the states to enact their own regulations. And so she goes on to say that the power is ultimately with the people themselves, and they're not going to allow this legislature to interfere with the people. And they go on to also talk about how even dictionaries at the time our Constitution was written referred to legislature. A legislature was defined as the power to govern. It didn't define an actual body of legislatures.
John, is this a big setback for Republicans?
I don't think so. Frankly, I view this as a state. This may surprise both of you, but I view this as a states' rights decision. Arizona passed a law as Jeff has pointed out, under Arizona's constitution, the people have a right of initiative, and that means that the people can pass laws, and the people passed a law. I have, frankly, between you and me, between us and now in the audience, I've never thought much of this lawsuit by the legislature, because the people do have a right in Arizona to pass an initiative. That's Arizona's law. And I view this as a determination by the Supreme Court that the law made by the people of the state of Arizona will govern, which gives Arizona states' rights, its state right to make its own decisions. You may or may not agree with that decision of the people in the initiative, but that was the decision of the people of the state of Arizona. It's a recognition that Arizona's law governs and will not be overridden by some federal determination. So it's a states' right decision in favor of Arizona, I think, in that case. Now, getting to whether or not this is a good idea, I get a kick out of people who say, oh, great, we've got this independent commission. I mean, Jeff knows as well as I know, it ain't no independent commission. And, you know, you've got two Democrats and two Republicans, and then you've got this so-called independent on there who has voted consistently with the Democrats. I was involved in some of the litigation on behalf of one of the commissioners. And I will tell you that I've been through all the depositions personally. I will tell you it was an absolute cram down by a vote of the Democrats and the so-called independent Mathis, who voted consistently and forever with the Democrats in that. And it's a Democratic map.
So you're saying the Republicans didn't have much of a chance on that?
Well, and the same thing happened 10 years before. Mm-hmm. I mean, the so-called independent on there that time was really a Republican.
Yeah.
And he sided with the Republicans, and they got maps that they liked. And you notice they didn't sue that time, but they got maps that favored the Republicans substantially.
And I think the point is that it's two points. It's a decision by the people of the state of Arizona that's been honored by the Supreme Court. I view that as a good thing. And number two, people are mistaken if they think this is going to be any better than the legislature, because it's not. Hmm. It's going to be political determinations depending upon who that independent is. And as Jeff has pointed out, sometimes the independent is more with the Republicans, sometimes the independent is more with the Democrats. This time she was clearly with the Democrats. And that's just the way it works. It's going to be a gerrymandering process, whoever does it. And so the attitude of the people when they pass this initiative that, oh, we're going to have this fair redistricting process, it hasn't happened.
Well, it could be improved, and here's how it could be improved. And I think the legislature could actually do this because, you know, the legislature can change some of these initiatives if they do something that furthers the purpose, and if they have, I think it's a 2/3 or 3/4 vote to do it. And here's how they could fix it. It won't be perfect, but it'll be better, is increase the number of people on that commission. You've got basically one person making the decisions. You're going to side
That's
with
right.
one side or the other.
That's right.
It should probably be something like five independents, 5 Republicans, and 5 Democrats, and that would also reflect more of the voter database that
we
have.
I think that's
right
an excellent
too.
Idea.
California has something kind of similar to that, although it's even bigger. I think it's something like 30 people are on it, mm-hmm. and so it's a very large commission.
Yeah, if we had a larger commission where one person weren't making effectively with the ability to balance the power in one camp or the other, it would be a much better process and a much fairer process and a much less political process. But right now what we have is just another political process. I liked your idea, Jeff, and I think it's a good idea.
All right, coming up now on 12:14, I think this might be a good place to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about an historic 24 hours last week at the Supreme Court. That's coming up next on our Monday Political Face-Off. Jeff Rogers and John Munger are with us. We'll be right back.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off, brought to you by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe's at Fort Lowell and Dodge. You can also check them out on Facebook and on the web at moesgallery.com. John Munger and Jeff Rogers with us. And from a legal standpoint, you two gentlemen must have been very interested in watching what happened unfolding really in 24 hours yesterday with the Supreme Court upholding the Affordable Care Act and then making basically gay marriage available to anyone in any states. John, overall, what were some of your thoughts on both, kind of bottom line?
Well, I think that the Obamacare decision was a very bad decision. The statutes refer to exchanges established by the states in many places, and they refer clearly to one of the 50 states. And the Supreme Court took this one provision and said, "Oh, that doesn't mean one of the 50 states. That means the federal government." You see, in order to interpret that provision in any way other than the way it reads, the provision first has to be ambiguous. A court can't reinterpret something that's unambiguous. So first they had to make the decision that was ambiguous. How that provision, an exchange established by the state, as used in other provisions of the statute, same statute, could be ambiguous is beyond me. I just disagree with that decision. I think it's an interference by the court with what the law says. I think despite what the court says, they're attempting to give deference to what Congress may or may not have intended. I don't think Congress intended it the way it came out anyway, but this whole concept of giving deference to laws is wrong. If laws are challenged for constitutional or for other reasons, they ought to be taken on their merits, and there ought not be a particular burden of proof against anybody. And unfortunately, we've gotten into where the courts work so hard to uphold statutes, which on their face are wrong, that they're really interfering. Now, with regard to the gay marriage, I happen to agree with that decision, and I'll tell you why so your listeners can understand. I think the courts were dealing, there are two aspects of marriage. One is in the government, which is licensing purposes. The other is in marriage. This decision only dealt with the government licensing, that governments are required to license. It was a pure equal protection argument that people want to marry whoever they want to marry, and the government cannot have any unequal rights among those people. It does not affect the churches. It does not affect the church definition of marriage. Churches have their own qualifications. For example, in some churches, like the Catholic Church, a non-Catholic cannot marry a Catholic. Okay. And the courts aren't interfering with that. So people need to get off of this concept that this somehow interferes with the churches. It doesn't. It's a licensing question by the government.
Jeff, some of your thoughts.
Well, I tend to agree with John about the marriage issue. I applaud the court for wading into this and taking care of this issue. And I have many LGBT friends that I think are thrilled to know that their marriage and union will be recognized. But I also have been an advocate for many, many years that maybe government ought to get out of the marriage business entirely and create nothing but civil unions. And then when you want to get married, you go to your church and get married. And if your church accepts same-sex marriage, great. If it doesn't, mm-hmm. you go to one that does.
You're saying get the government out of the marriage.
I agree with that, and I've mm-hmm. written about that. There is no reason for the government to be involved in marriage. It's just one more set of regulations mm-hmm. where the government has no business. And marriage is basically a religious issue. There ought to be civil unions amongst whoever wants to get married. You get a license, and the only question for the license is consanguinity, which is that you can't be too close in blood. There needs to be some blood testing, and that's it.
Yeah. Wow.
And then you ought to be able to marry whoever the heck you want.
And as to the Affordable Care Act, I think they got it right. I think I've always said this was a frivolous lawsuit to begin with. You take a 900-page law, you don't take five words and say, okay, these five words mean this. You look at the entirety of the 900 pages and see how the description of the exchanges is used throughout the bill. Now, this was certainly an embarrassment in drafting, but even you'll notice that the dissenters never said one word in the dissent about the legislative history or the purpose of the act. They didn't touch that because they know that's ground that they're going to sink into. The fact is that we all knew what the purpose of this act was, and we all knew what Congress intended. Some of the Republican senators who actually voted against it came out and publicly said, well, none of us ever thought that only applied to state-run exchanges. They all believed when they passed the law that it applied to the federal exchanges and the state exchanges. Now, what happens is, sometimes when you draft a bill and you got 50 chefs, it doesn't exactly come out tasting so well. And that's what happened here.
Especially when it's a cram down like that.
And the court pointed that out. They said this thing wasn't even passed through the normal channels of legislation. It went through that reconciliation,
But I just don't see on that issue, I don't see how that phrase was ambiguous in any way on its face and therefore should not have been reinterpreted by the court. The one message I want to get out to my conservative friends out there with regard to this gay marriage thing. Number one, this decision does not affect the churches. Now, if somebody wants to try and carry it further, the old slippery slope argument, we'll get into that. But I just have very serious doubts that the courts are ever going to override the right of the churches to determine whether they're going to marry somebody, who they're going to marry, and because of the First Amendment.
I think John's right on that, but I think that the open question for us is going to be, and where the next litigation is going to come from, is it's going to be where people have a sincerely held religious belief and they do not want to, the famous one of the baker who bakes a cake for a gay marriage.
Well,
that's going to be the next open question.
And there
question
are going to be some
us.
Very fine lines. The other point I want to make to my
Real
conservative
quickly,
fringe
John.
is that the people who wanted this to a large extent are people who honor the institution of marriage. They want to be married. They're not against marriage. They just want to marry whoever they want.
All right, let's go to the Buckmaster Show live line. Roger has been waiting on the live line. Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, my whole deal with the government is they shouldn't be involved in any religious sacrament. And we go to the Catholic Church. So I don't recognize any marriage performed by government because I don't worship government. And in fact, when my daughter went to get married, I told her, if you want to get married in a park and not by a man of the cloth, I'm not paying for it because I don't even recognize it as a marriage.
Well, Roger, so, as I've said, I agree with you, but I don't think that this decision interferes with what happens in your church or any other church. I think it what only place it affects is what happens at the government licensing office, period. Nothing more, nothing less. And as both Jeff and I have agreed, we basically agree with you. The government ought to get out of the marriage business. It ought not be involved. Marriage has historically always been a church issue, and the government somehow got involved in this over the years, and it ought to get out.
Couldn't agree more.
All right. How does this? How will these decisions impact the field of Republican candidates?
Well, I think that a lot of the Republican candidates are saying, as I think that they ought to say, look, I think that in the long run, people are going to recognize this is a decision about the government licensing offices and not about churches. That there are a lot of people who are concerned about the slippery slope. And they should be talking about, let's make sure that it doesn't become a slippery slope, although I don't think it should be or will be because of the rights protected under the First Amendment, which are very explicit. The government has to butt out of religion. So I don't think you're going to see government coming into religion. What I'd like to see people do is say, look, we're all in good faith here. Those of us who I've read a lot of conservatives say, I disagree with this decision. But I don't think you're going to hell. I'm not. You're still my friend. We all have our rights to our opinions. You respect my opinion in the religious area, and I'll respect your opinion in the religious area. And government ought to butt out.
Well, I think Republican candidates for president ought to put this issue behind them, because I think it's something it's something that's only going to hurt them in the voters' eyes, because this is an issue that has changed dramatically in the past 10 years, and it's probably something they ought to leave alone. On the redistricting case, I think that's going to – we're going to see some candidates emerge now that CD2 is still going to be competitive. You may see a lot more people announcing for that race on the Democratic side, and heaven knows what's going to happen in Ann Kirkpatrick's district, that district. One, that's a very competitive district, and it will remain so. I think we'll probably see some strong Republican and strong Democrat candidates emerge in that.
And I think one of the things that my fellow Republicans ought to recognize is that the legislative map that was drawn by that same commission is very pro-Republican. I mean, it basically guarantees a Republican legislature for the next 10 years. It is not a bad legislative map at all.
Let's see if we can work one more call in. We have Malcolm, who is waiting. He called 790-2040. Malcolm, go ahead. You're on the Monday Political Face-Off.
Hi, real quick. The ruling, gay marriage ruling, how do you guys feel about the same rights? Because it seems like the federal government's overreaching. And if that's the case, if they're going to allow this to go off through every state, somebody brought up a good point about concealed carry laws and the link it has to this ruling about other states having to recognize the other states' laws. And I think it's definitely a slippery slope, not to mention someone marrying multiple partners. How do you guys feel about federal government getting too big and dictating too much to the states?
Well, I think my view of it is that I was concerned in the gay marriage case more about the state's rights issue, maybe you could argue that every state ought to have the right to make its own decision. The problem is that under the Constitution, each state has to give comity to comity to the other state's laws. And I think all the Supreme Court was saying is, look, we've got to do this. I, because of the Second Amendment with regard to gun rights, if you have to have comity in other states, then you're going to have to say Maine or New York needs to recognize Arizona's gun laws.
Not comedy.
comity. Okay. And so I think it may work the other way with gun rights, where our gun rights here in Arizona need to be recognized in New York. Try that on for size.
All right, Jeff, final comment,
I think
please.
We're going to have a lot of problems with Texas, Alabama, and some of the other southern states. They're going to have to be dragged, kicking and screaming into conforming with this law. Texas Attorney General's already said that if people in his state don't want to issue the licenses, they don't have to. Well, the Supremacy Clause says otherwise. And so some of these people, we're going to have to start slapping people with contempt and get some federal court orders to get jerk a knot in these people's tails, because you cannot thumb your nose at the federal government. George Wallace tried that, and we saw how that
went.
Well,
I do know Texas is an issue, but Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, some of the other southern states' governors have said, look, we're going to comply with the federal court ruling. We're going to issue marriage licenses.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to be a major issue.
Jeff Rogers and John Munger, good session. Thank you very much. The Monday Political Face-Off, sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. Moe, thank you very much for your support of our Monday Political Face-Off. Be right back. It's 12:32.
Getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garber on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering its promises, completing 149 out of 200 intersection improvements, 48 of 80 pedestrian safety crossings, 108 of 200 bus pullouts, and 226 miles of 500 promised bike lanes. Since the 2006 voter approval of the RTA plan, some 650 projects are completed. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us.
How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $99 per month. Plus, get your first month free. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 8/30/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
Well, 35 on this Monday afternoon in Tucson. This is the Buckmaster Show coming to you from AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We're live streaming on my website, buckmastershow.com, and on the station's website, kvoi.com. Well, the summer thunderstorm season is now officially underway. Will it be a productive one? Zach Guido is with us. Zach is a climate scientist with the University of Arizona Climate Assessment for the Southwest Group at the UA-based Institute of the Environment. How are you, Zach?
I'm great, thanks. And I'm happy to talk about everybody's favorite climate season of the year.
We were waiting, and I know you've been traveling. You were down in the Caribbean, Jamaica, where, believe it or not, they've had kind of a big drought down there, haven't they?
They have. 2014, even in this year, they experienced quite a bit of dry conditions. Most people think of the Caribbean as being hurricane prone, but they have a pretty pronounced dry season that is like here, influenced by El Nino. But I'm happy to be back during the monsoon season, but I did miss a pretty interesting May and early part of June.
Yeah, I mean, rarely does it ever rain here this May and early June. In fact, while you were away, Phoenix had a daily rainfall record. Guess what? It was a trace of rain.
And I did see that.
And the fact
but that's noteworthy.
Yeah, I mean, it just does not rain in these parts usually in May and early June.
No, you know, May was interesting. I mean, we basically, for the most of May, had a downward trend in temperature. You normally expect temperatures to sort of mount before you get to the sort of June, which is, in my opinion, climate purgatory. But, you know, we had very unseasonably cool conditions in May. And then, it rained. There was precipitation around, and it rained in a few places in June. That was aided by some tropical hurricanes in the East Pacific, which, you know, happen, but they tend not to interact with the land, but they sort of hug the the West Coast, and I believe Andres and Blanca both provided some influx of moisture, which was not only important for cooling temperatures, but also helped out the fire season.
The Cabo area and the Southern Baja Peninsula, that is the earliest ever recorded for a landfall of a hurricane.
Yeah.
Earliest in the season.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate for them because they also were slapped pretty hard by Odile last year, Cabo in particular. But yeah, during this time of the year when the hurricanes form, they usually sort of recurve westward out into the sea and don't do too much damage. But this year we had them, like I said, hug the coast, and moisture and humidity came into the region, which was, I think, quite nice.
Since the 1940s, Zach, and you may know this statistic, there have been only really 8 occurrences where we have had the 3 days of the humidity levels to make it kind of the a monsoon, and this is one of those years. So that indication would, if you're going to, we're off to a good start,
yeah.
But whether or not it continues, I mean, we've had these kind of early starts before, and then by mid-July, it looks like it's all over.
Right. Yeah. So the monsoon high has set up earlier than average. And, you know, consequently, historically, the monsoon starts around for this region around like July 4th. I believe it actually started on July 4th exactly last year. Maybe it was July 3rd. And so it's come in. It's set up. You know, we had a nice day yesterday. What that does statistically is the earlier it comes on, the more likely you are to have sort of an above average precipitation season. So that sort of bode well statistically. And, you know, we have some interesting happenings in the tropical Pacific Ocean with El Nino, which is, you know, we talked about this last year. There looked to be this mounting El Nino early last year, that the sea surface temperatures were all primed to be a moderate or a strong event. And then the atmosphere sort of never, you know, was in lockstep with it. Fast forward a year and we still have those really high above average sea surface temperatures. But the difference is the atmosphere tends to be is responding quite well. And that's partly why we had precipitation here in May, is that we had an enhanced subtropical jet that combined with the precipitation that was pushed up by the tropical hurricanes or storms. And when that happens, you get rain events. So hopefully that we'll see more of that, and it'll be a pretty good monsoon season.
And how concerned are you about Lake Mead? The decline there now is below the 1,075-foot level. Some are saying that that's very bad news for the future. What do you think?
Well, I think it is. It's bad and good news. It's bad news in that, you know, obviously the region needs as much water as it can have, and the Colorado River is already overallocated to begin with. It's good news in, I think, it does create an opportunity to figure out some of the water shortage issues. And, you know, when we look for the winter, I mean, for Colorado, where a lot of the water in the Colorado River comes from, the winter is the season, and you know, a lot could happen this winter that could sort of stave off that shortage. But the shortage will likely occur sometime in the future. And if we have another bad winter in Colorado, it's going to be soon.
15 years is what a lot of the climatologists are saying, that the drought that we are in the 15th year. Whether or not this monsoon, probably one summer thunderstorm season, can't really erase and end a prolonged drought like that, can it?
No, I mean, it's funny. I think we have to, 15 years is a long time. Maybe we should rethink about what we're considering a drought or what we're considering normal. But no, you're right. I mean, we need subsequent or successive years of above average conditions. But we had a decent winter rainfall in southern Arizona, and particularly the Four Corners region. Last monsoon season was decent. I mean, the monsoon season, you're always going to have places that don't get precipitation, and you're going to have places that do. But by and large, it was a decent monsoon season. So we've made some dents, and drought is a tricky thing to talk about, because water supply, you need a lot of successive years to sort of boost the dwindling water supplies that have happened over the last 15 years. But, you know, for something like grasses for ranchers, or even sort of annual crops that aren't on irrigation, you need maybe just a season or a couple seasons.
And actually, we're in better shape than California.
Yeah, California's in it's definitely a dire situation over there. And you know, a silver lining, not to count on it, but a silver lining could be this El Nino that's brewing. What happens more times than not is when you get a moderate and strong El Nino event, you just get increased chances for above average precipitation. It's not the case for a weak El Nino event, which was the case last year. So, you know, California is in extreme or exceptional drought. There is conservation requirements going in there. So, you know, this winter, and of course they pay attention to the winter season and not the summer. They don't get much rain during these months. So, what the winter precipitation will do will matter a lot. So we can come back and talk about that in November, mm-hmm. January or February.
We will, and we'll wrap it up with you in a few seconds here. But when the early hurricanes in the area off of Mexico, in contrast to very little been going on in the area where you were down in the Caribbean Basin, they had a very quiet year last year, right. And it looks like they're off to the same thing.
Yeah, and when you run the statistics on the El Nino, I mean, I talk about El Nino because what happens in the tropical Pacific Ocean really does influence global climate. It pulls the atmospheric strings. It influences the position and the intensity of the jet stream. And one of the things that happens in the Caribbean is it suppresses hurricane and storm activity, and you tend to get less frequent storms, which happened last year, in addition to just regular sort of precipitation events, and consequently, they had a very, very dry season, and it's also forecasted again this year. So, for those small islands that, you know, don't have these big reservoirs like we do here, even one season is pretty important that they replenish their sources.
All right, Zach Guido from the University of Arizona. What's your website, Zach?
Clemus is www.clemus.arizona.edu.
Clemus is C-L-I-M-A-S.
M-A-S. Yeah, or Climus.
Climus.
We affectionately known as Clemus.
Okay. Zach, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bill.
This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And they did get some really good rain, by the way, Zach, over in that area where southwest New Mexico over the weekend. Good storms moving through that area. It's greening up over there. It'd be a great weekend. Or if you've got a couple of days off this week, around the 4th even, to go over to Silver City. They've got a big celebration planned just 3 hours east of Tucson. We send a lot of our show listeners over there. Everybody comes back saying the same thing. Had a great time. There are wonderful places to stay like Georgetown Cabins and Bear Creek Cabins. You can find the full listing of the many things to do in Silver City and Grant County and the great places to stay by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. 12:45 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll talk about JTED. That's next. Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 650 projects to date, including pedestrian safety crossings, intersection safety improvements, and bus pullouts, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us on Tuesday for a mid-year economic outlook from the State Chamber of Commerce. Plus, TUSD board member Dr. Mark Stegeman joins us, Buckmaster, noon to 1 on Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, with anywhere in the world live streaming podcasts and show archive at buckmastershow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster, and with me is Dr. Alan Storm. Dr. Storm is Pima County JTED Superintendent. JTED stands for Joint Technological Education Districts here in Arizona. And in Southern Arizona, they were approved by voters in 2006 to offer tuition-free career and technical education programs to high school students from public, private, charter, and home schools. Adults under 22 with a GED or who are studying to get one may also participate. Dr. Storm, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me here.
Well, JTED got cut. Bottom line, the budget was not kind to the JTED programs. Can you give me kind of an overview on how much money was cut out of your budget?
We'll go back about 5 years because that's where they started cutting us. Back in 2010, we had gotten to about 22,000 students in Pima County in the career and tech ed programs. And they sort of snapped their fingers and overnight said, we're not going to fund ninth grade students any longer. That cut about 45% out of our budget. The cut statewide for all of the JTEDs was $29 million. Of that $29 million, $14 million of that was in Pima County. We've obviously fell back to, you know, a smaller number of students. We've grown again since then. And the budget that was passed for 16-17, this is not this next school year, but the year after, will cut another $30 million from the JTEDs across the state. We will lose essentially 50% of the funding that goes to our member districts.
Is it sustainable at those levels?
I don't think any business or organization can take a 40% cut and actually survive. It's very bleak. You could cut to the point of being non-existent.
JTED gets high marks from so many people that say vocational education is so needed, and the programs have really turned lives around. How do you figure, or what have you heard, why did this happen to JTED?
I think that people, that our legislators did not fully understand the impact of the cut. I think some of the less well-meaning legislators convinced other legislators that we would be okay. And in fact, I do know that some of the legislators have told me that they were grouped in with other freshman legislators and told, don't worry about JTEDs. They can raise their tax rates. That's patently false. The taxpayer voted for a 5 cent per hundred tax. That's what we have as a tax rate. We can't change that.
Have the taxpayers gotten their money's worth with JTAD?
I think very much so. And I one of the I think the best statistic that I can give you is not from me and it's not from the local JTAD. It's from the Department of Education, and it's also from the Morrison Institute report they did 2 years ago. Kids who take 2 years of career and technical education graduate at a 98% rate. That's versus the 74% rate of graduation across the state. 98% graduation rate for students who have had 2 years in a career and tech ed program.
So how do we turn this around?
We're working very hard with our local business folks. Our local business folks are what got JTED passed in 2006. The Southern Arizona Leadership Council, Mr. Click, other very important businesses put a great deal of money into the campaign to fund JTED. And I think it's those folks, the Tucson Electric Power folks, the Southwest Gas folks, they were all really, really involved. The hospital associations, very much involved. And I think it will take all of those people working with the legislature and the governor to turn this funding around.
Does it have to be turned around before the start of the planning for the next school year?
Well, what happens is that the JLBC, the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, takes that budget that was passed last year for 16-17, and that will be their working operating budget come this fall before the legislators go back into session in January. So the fear is that if they start working on that budget in October and November of this year, that's going to be the budget for 16-17. I think the legislature could turn this around at the beginning of next session, in other words, in January of 16. My hope would be that it could somehow get turned around this fall. All of our high schools need to know by October and November what their programs of offering are going to be so that students start enrolling in January.
Can you tell us a little bit about the programs that are offered? What kind of it's a wide spectrum of programs serving many students.
It's a very broad spectrum, and it does entail the traditional vocational programs such as construction and automotive technology, but it goes to very high-end programs. We have four-year engineering programs, and when I say four-year engineering programs, that's one of the obvious. So how do you do a four-year program when you don't get funding for freshmen? Mm-hmm. So we have engineering. We have bioscience and biotechnology. We have certified nursing assistants. We have medical assistants. We have law and public safety. We have fire sciences. So it's a very broad spectrum of programs and with some very high-end offerings. A lot of our kids are not terminal in terms of that they get their certificate and they leave. Many, many of our students are going on to college. So it's not either or. It's both.
And JTED is in most of the high schools or all of the high schools?
Every high school has their own CTE programs, which are called satellites. They are JTED programs, and it is that money in those high schools that generates the funding for JTED. In addition to those, every one of those high school programs, we also have what we call central campus programs that we specifically run as JTED programs in JTED facilities. And we have 9 different facilities that we operate.
How many students do you think are being served by JTED?
Currently about 17,000.
And you've had, over the years since the program was approved, there's been tens of thousands that have benefited.
We started out at 12,000 in July of 2007. By the end of 2008, we had 22,000. In 2010, when they cut us $29 million, we dropped back to about 14,000, and we've grown now back to about 17,000.
Are you in charter schools as well?
We're not in charter schools, okay. But charter schools are our students also.
Mm-hmm. And again, getting back to, there could be a special session to solve this. That would be probably your best hope, wouldn't it be?
That would be my number one hope.
And it wouldn't be that difficult necessarily. A special session on this could probably be taken care of in a couple of days.
There is a possibility that the governor would call a special session, not for the JTED issue, but for the school lawsuit issue of the previous 5-year funding that the state owes to the school districts. If that were settled by the courts, the governor would call a special session. If he were to call that special session for that issue, I would plead with him to also put JTED funding as another item on that call for special session.
And how many JTED programs are there across the state?
There are currently 14 JTEDs. Yuma was just approved this past fall as a new JTED, and we service 92,000 students in Arizona.
Is JTED something that was built on a model from another state, Dr. Storm?
No, we're really an anomaly.
It's a hybrid for Arizona.
It is a hybrid for Arizona. Most states have regional career and vocational technical buildings. We don't happen to have that model here, and part of that is because we have such rural districts. The three largest JTEDs are the East Valley Institute of Technology, EVIT, the WestMEC, which is the Western Maricopa County, and Pima. We're the three largest, and we have that hybrid model of being in the member schools in addition to having our own campuses.
Would you like our listeners to contact their lawmakers, their state lawmakers, to say, help out JTED?
I absolutely would, for every legislator and the governor's office.
Dr. Alan Storm, the superintendent of the Pima County JTED, thank you and good luck to you in restoring, hopefully, funding to what I think pretty much everybody I've run into says, how did it happen? How did JTED get cut? Because folks think it's a really good deal.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Storm. The Buckmaster Show will be back with you tomorrow at 12:04. But until then, we have more local talk coming up on KVOI. We have 4 Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw. Then tomorrow morning, of course, 3 hours of local talk. It begins at 6 o'clock in the morning with Wake Up Tucson, 6 to 8. And then Chris DeSimone does his show from 8 to 9 with a different guest host every day. And on the other side of the glass for those shows, I'll be lucky enough, and it's Ed Alexander, and I'm lucky enough to have Ed back with me at 12:04. Until that time, have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.